Welcome to ACC's CardiaCast. I'm Ty Gluckman, Medical Director of the Center for Cardiovascular Analytics, Research and Data Science at the Providence Heart Institute in Portland, Oregon. And today I'm joined by two experts, Drs. Rashmi Shah and Nihar Desai, discussing how cardiovascular clinicians can leverage the power of real-world data and real-world evidence to improve care. This is the third episode in a series of three recorded at the New York Cardiovascular Symposium in December of 2019. This episode was made possible with support from Janssen Pharmaceuticals. I'll ask both of you to introduce yourself, and I'll start first with you, Rashmi.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. My name is Rashmi Shah, and I am a non-invasive cardiologist at the University of Utah. And my research interest focuses on using electronic medical record to create patient phenotypes.
Great.
Thanks, Ty. It's great to be with you. It's Nihar Desai. I'm an associate professor at the Yale School of Medicine, associate chief of the section of cardiovascular medicine, and an investigator at the Center for Outcomes Research and Evaluation.
Wonderful to have you here both with us. And you both gave some fantastic presentations here in New York talking about real-world data that gets transitioned into real-world evidence. Maybe we can start with a little bit of, there are a bunch of listeners, I bet, out there saying, I've heard of real-world data, I've heard of real-world evidence, but I'm not sure how it necessarily impacts my care. Rashmi, maybe you can just tell us a little bit about what are the potential sources of real-world data that we may be thinking about or haven't thought of that might be informing healthcare in the years to come?
Yeah, so I think for practicing clinicians, real-world data is probably already impacting your clinical practice. So one example of this is things like quality metrics. So your institution is going to be counting how many of your heart attack patients are on a beta blocker, how many of your AFib patients are on oral anticoagulant. And the way they're generating that data to give back to you is using the real-world data sources that are generally being collected by the electronic medical record. So in the immediate term, it's probably already impacting a lot of the listeners. In the short term, I'll say that probably what's going to happen is some of the treatments that are going to be coming down the pipeline, the evidence for those treatments is going to be generated from some combination of real-world data and traditional clinical trial type data. And so it's critical for clinicians to understand real-world data and the methods that are used to generate the evidence in order to decide if they think that treatment is the correct one for the patients.
Perfect. And Nihar, we think about all of our sources of truth coming from randomized clinical trials. You nicely highlighted some non-traditional means by which we can incorporate data that can inform practice. Maybe you can share with our listeners just what some of those other examples may be, either from registries or from our EHR, and in fact, trials that may be embedded within those sources going forward.
Yeah, I think this is really one of the key aspects for real-world data and real-world evidence, which is there are a diverse set of data sources, whether that be clinical registries, whether that be administrative claims data, whether that be the EHR, or whether that even be wearables or other types of data streams that are we haven't even thought of really yet. And that each of these can be leveraged to give us important insights into clinical practice and really advance and improve clinical care, whether that be asking a question of comparative effectiveness to really test two different drugs or two different devices or two different strategies, or actually asking a question of how are we doing in contemporary practice? Are there disparities in care? Are there opportunities for us to improve care or blind spots in our clinical practice that we need to address? And so I think the real key is what is the data set that you're looking at? What is the question that you're asking? And what is the right kind of statistical approach for trying to turn that data into evidence?
Perfect. And I know we have some individuals listening that may be fellows in training. They may be early career individuals, or they may be someone who's passionate about quality improvement, health services research. Rashmi, what does a trajectory look like as we're beginning to realize that, in fact, real-world data is already here and we're not even aware that we're using it, but likely it's going to grow significantly? What might a career trajectory look like for someone who has an interest like this, and how might they be able to get more involved?
Yeah, so before I get specifically into that question, I'll step back and say, clinicians must get involved. It's not whether or not you want to or you feel like you can. You really need to, because we don't what we need, the people driving this engine, we need them to be the clinicians and the patients, not the computer scientists, not the administrators, probably not the policymakers. I'm not sure about that one. But it really has to be the people at the bedside. So on that context, let's think about how clinicians can get involved. I think for a lot of people who haven't sort of stepped into this world yet, it feels a little daunting. You know, it involves some statistical methods, propensity matching, machine learning, and all of that sounds very daunting. But really the fundamental thing here is your clinical expertise. When you critically appraise the literature or the evidence, you see patients. So you know what the potential confounders are, right? Somebody who designs a computer algorithm has no idea what the potential confounder are because they've never seen a patient. So that's why the clinicians really need to get involved. So if you look at, let's say you are looking at some study that uses real-world evidence, there will be some very complicated methods that describe the statistical approach. Don't worry about that initially, but just look at what's the data. Are these the data elements that I know from my clinical experience are really the important ones here in determining a patient's outcome? So one that's often criticized as absent is frailty. It's very hard to capture. It's not systematically captured, and it's often absent. So, you know, as a clinician, you know that needs to be there. So if you don't see that, it doesn't matter how much adjustment or fancy statistical methods they used, it's missing. It's a confounder. So even if you're not really in the weeds of the data and the methods, as a clinician, get a seat at the table and use your clinical expertise to inform the direction of this work.
And if you're someone who is interested in more formal training or a career trajectory in that direction, are there some good pearls that you might share to say, here's some basic education training, or for that matter, can anyone get involved at any time?
Yeah, and I think anyone can get involved at any time, and I think that's sort of a little bit the beauty of this, probably how I ended up here, because it's statistics. You need to learn statistics. And it's computer stuff. So to get involved in this, at least from a research and then eventually implementation standpoint, you need a computer, right? You don't need a wet lab. And now with education, is Coursera and all those sorts of resources, anybody can learn that stuff. It's just a matter of commitment and time. And once you get into it a little, you find the right people in your institution who are also doing it and buddy up with them.
Perfect. Nihar, you've had a lot of varied interests, but one of which has been related to our registries, and it's been a tremendous data asset for the college and has taught us a lot. Give our listeners a little bit of ideas about where the registries could be utilized as a real-world data set that could help to better inform care, either about things that we're doing well or, frankly, things that need to get better.
Yeah, I truly think that the clinical registries, including those that are run by the American College of Cardiology, specifically the National Cardiovascular Data Registry, are a real national treasure, and I think a real opportunity for fellows, for junior faculty, for others that are interested to get involved in the research enterprise. And I think all it takes to get started is to ask a question. And I think the best questions come from your clinical work, from the patients you see. There are questions that arise every day, whether it's in the office or in the hospital. And I will say I've been fortunate enough to work with the registries. Yale serves as a data analytics center for NCDR. And I think whether the question is around appropriate use criteria and how things are going on the procedural side to how people are using different antithrombotic strategies in routine practice to actually embedding randomized trials within the registries, to looking at how devices are working for patients with cardiogenic shock. That's just a broad spectrum of the kinds of work that can be done with the registries, and I would wholeheartedly encourage all of our listeners to get involved, to make sure that your hospital is actually participating in these programs, and then to engage in doing some of the scholarly work that desperately needs to be done to answer the questions that you and your colleagues and all of us together really need to be answered as we take care of patients.
One of the fun things I like about meetings like this and other national forums is that you get to see colleagues and friends, but they're also potential collaborators. And Rashmi, to the point that you brought up of having a computer, having some basic, and in some cases more advanced statistical training, Just talking about your opportunity to collaborate in this space, and do you see this as an area where increasingly we're not just doing this within internally our own organization, but it might be someone has a passion around atrial fibrillation or heart failure, and you might be working with people at other institutions in this regard? Maybe it's a bigger question about collaboration in general, but I think that the real-world data, real-world evidence space seems to be particularly ripe as an opportunity to collaborate.
I think all of that is very true. So if focusing on maybe fellows in training or early career people, there is a huge amount of need for people who want to do this type of work. You know, all of us who are doing this will say there's at least 10 questions we just can't answer because we don't have time. So if you are early career or just now want to get involved in this type of work, write down all your questions, and when you come to meetings like this, or just email people. I'm always, every time I meet a trainee, I say, here's my email address, email me anytime. I'm always willing to chat. You know, just float your ideas out there. You'll find collaborators, and you know, early on, I think you have to be a little aggressive on pushing your idea forward and keep trying at it, but once you get in there, people are gonna help you. People are gonna make it happen, especially if you know you're asking an important question that's gonna matter in the end for a patient. There's a lot of opportunities here.
Nihar, any additional thoughts in that regard?
Yeah, I would say, you know, to the trainees and to the junior faculty that we're in the golden age of medicine, that we have seen, you know, technical advances and, you know, therapies and things that we can do to advance the care of patients, reduce morbidity and mortality in a way that we've never have been able to do before. In parallel, we're seeing the birth of medicine as a data science, as an information science. And so if you're interested, this is a career that I think will be quite enriching to you professionally, scientifically. And I think the contributions that you can make, both to the patients that you care for individually, as well as informing the care of your colleagues and the system at large, are really profound. And so I would encourage all of you to really think deeply about your interests and what you want your career to be about and how we can all support you and help you along the way.
Rashmi Nihar, this has been a real pleasure for me today. Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedules to participate, and I know it's been of tremendous value to our listeners. Thank you.
Thank you. My pleasure.